Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Jonathan De Burka Butler joins us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Samoa, we're going to go to now. And this is, well, this is an ongoing story, I suppose, in terms of a measles outbreak. Well, how many people have died so far?
Yeah, so you're right to emphasize the fact that it's ongoing, because when I saw this first on Thursday, the total number of those dead was 22, and since then it's already gone up to 32, and as you can imagine, the vast majority of those are children. So 28 children unfortunately have died, and most of the cases that we have in Samoa from this measles outbreak are children, and we've got up to 2,400 people now who are being treated for this outbreak of measles. It's kind of a bizarre situation, really. It's also happening in Fiji and other islands around the place, apparently. The authorities in Samoa are putting it down to a rugby team that went to New Zealand, which is also having a bit of a problem, I believe, with this, and came back, and that's how the whole thing started, they reckon, anyway. But it's not helped by the uptake in vaccines.
Yes.
Which last year, coverage rates dropped to 40%.
Oh.
And 28% for the two-dose vaccine.
Mm.
So that is not helping. And UNICEF are pointing out that those rates are far lower than the 95% that are needed to stem measles from spreading. Now, of course, there are those who believe that this is all a major conspiracy and that vaccines don't actually stop this, but I think the proof probably here is right in front of our faces.
Is there skepticism about vaccines in Samoa?
So there's a rugby league wag, as she's called in the media. Okay, I don't really want to use that term, but woman who happens to be married to a well-known rugby league player.
Yes.
I take back what I said earlier. Okay, in fact, her name is Taylor Winterstein, and she has basically said, so when the Samoan government tried to tackle this, they started giving vaccines to people without giving them a choice, really.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And she has now said that this is an example of Nazi Samoa. Now, this is a woman who hosts workshops with her twin sister, where she gets paid, according to one source anyway, she gets paid about $200 per head at these anti-vaccination workshops, where she talks of about the evils of vaccination and the like. So, yes, there is skepticism in that part of the world also.
Yeah, is she uniquely responsible for promoting the skepticism, or had it been there beforehand?
No, and that is a very good point. It should be said that last year, I think there was two infants that died because of a vaccine that had been mixed mistakenly with anesthetic.
Okay.
So,
well, that's,
you know, so,
the,
so
yeah.
That doesn't help either. Yeah. So that's just a complete lack of competence there. So that doesn't help either. No.
Right, Bolivia we're going to now, and more trouble there. Three people are dead from clashes with the security forces.
Yeah, this is the latest in, you know, story I suppose we began to look at last month when the elections were taking place in Bolivia. And there was questions over those elections. The Organization of American States, kind of an EU equivalent, but with not as many powers in that part of the world, said there was serious irregularities in those elections. Eventually, Evo Morales, who had been leader there for a very long time and was going for his fourth term, he conceded. He decided to resign. Now, there were suggestions from the military that he might think about doing the same, and that's exactly what he's done. So he's gone off to Mexico, where he's been granted asylum there. But he's not staying quiet, all right? And that, of course, is encouraging his supporters to go out and, you know, put a stop to whatever political progress has been made in the country. And they're doing it by blocking access to roads and to fuel plants and various different things like that. So that is causing problems, and the police and the army are going in to stop these protests by the supporters of Morales. And of course, inevitably, that is leading to trouble. So at the moment, there's an interim government there. It's being headed by a woman by the name of Janaína Agnes, okay? And she's relatively interesting because she was actually fourth in line and there was never any sign of her ever becoming president. But because all the three people above her resigned, yeah, she was the only one left. And she happens to be a member of the opposition party, right?
She's the designated survivor.
Yeah, yeah, she is. But she was actually happy to kind of take it on. And, yeah, and she seems to have taken the bull by the horns to the point where Morales's party have signed up, contentiously at least, to a deal which will allow them to move forward to have an election. Okay, there hasn't been a date picked yet, and they've basically said, okay, we were going to declare Morales' resignation, we weren't going to accept it in Parliament, but we'll hold off on that vote, we'll have an election and we'll find a new candidate, because they obviously seem confident or feel confident enough that they could get back in with, not with Morales, but with another figure. Who we don't know who that is yet.
Yeah, okay. And if they agree on a date and they go forward with an election, will that effectively put paid to these protests?
Well, that's the hope. That's the hope. And things seem to have died down a little bit at this moment in time. So, yeah, that is the hope, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, you know, who plays is, for that, or against in an election, and who's organising this.
Indeed, and that's another factor. But I'm fascinated to see who the Morales' party are going to put up. And I wonder, is it a sign of them turning around and saying, okay, well, actually, we've had enough of Morales.
Yeah.
Keep him in Mexico. It's time to get somebody new in and keep the story going rather than the person.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
Colombia, we're going to go to now, and not dissimilar things happening in Colombia as well. So much so that they're going to close their borders.
Yes, they have. They closed the borders last week. There was protest marches that took place last Thursday involving 250,000 people in Bogota, which is huge numbers for Colombia, apparently. And so there's lots of people who've gone out for lots of different reasons. So there's people who've gone out because of austerity measures and changes to pensions and tax reforms and privatisation and minimum wage changes, all sorts of different things. There's also been controversy around FARC. There was a justice minister who resigned a couple of weeks ago, I think, because he was trying to suppress a report on a bombing that was targeting FARC dissidents and ended up killing 8 children. Mm. So he had to resign. So all of these different things are leading to, unhappiness amongst lots of different strands of society. And they all seem to have organised and got together and gone out to try and ask for the resignation, at least, of Iván Duque, who's only been there since August of 2018.
Yeah, but there was a car bomb.
A car bomb in the west of the country which killed 3 police. Some protesters have been killed as well. I think the total is there's over 20 people who've died already in these protests. Mm. So there's just tension right across that region. I mean, we were talking a few weeks ago, I think, about Ecuador, and a few weeks before that, Chile. And it's, you know, Brazil is always, always problems there. And, you know, Argentina's economy. It's just fascinating place at the moment. And as I said, a lot of tension.
Yeah, but for different reasons. Yes. That it seems if they can get 250,000 people to turn out who maybe have a series of grievances.
Yeah, that's what it is in the case of Colombia. But that's also what the case was in the case of Ecuador. And some organisers are saying that, you know, the people in Colombia have taken their inspiration from the people in Ecuador because they got something out of the government.
Yeah.
So now there's now the media, of course, who want to package this nice up and put a bow on it, are calling it the South American Spring. You know, but who knows?
Not get too excited about.
Exactly.
But the move of closing their borders, how's that going to change anything or improve anything? Given that the protests are happening within Colombia anyway, Colombians.
That's a good point. But there is an awful lot of strife on that border, particularly with Venezuela. So they would want to contain that as much as they possibly can, I think.
Yeah. Now, the next story is a total novelty. It's a story about Ukraine that doesn't involve Zelensky or Donald Trump or the Bidens.
Yes.
So what's it about?
It's about football. And it's the captain of a team there called Shakhtar Donetsk, who are actually playing Manchester City tonight in the Champions League, if you're interested. But it's their captain is from Brazil. His name is Tyson. And he's been there in the Ukraine for about 9 years, I think, and he'd be well known. He's a well-known figure there. And They were playing a match against Dynamo Kiev, and as football fans can be, they can be rather rude to good players usually on the other team. And in this case, they were directly racist towards monkey chants, all sorts of different things. So this particular player, Tyson, decided to take the law into his own hands. He turned around to the fans and he showed them his middle finger, and then he kicked the ball into the stand. He was sent off for that. And he's been given a one-match ban by the Ukrainian Football Association for taking the law, I suppose, as they see it, into their own hands, or into his own hands. So the Football Federation, the World Players Union, have come out in support for him and have condemned the move. But I think really the point that I'm probably trying to make here is that this is becoming a problem right across Europe.
Yes.
There's been a lot of talk, speaking of Manchester City, of Raheem Sterling getting a lot of racist abuse lately in various different situations. So it's something that we, I think, thought we had seen the back of, but it appears not to be gone altogether.
Is FIFA making, and various national football unions, are they making serious efforts to try and stamp this kind of thing out?
That I do not know, I have to be honest with you. Yeah. I mean, they'd have their campaigns. You know, you might see the ads with Ronaldo and Messi and all the guys, you know, stamp out racism and this kind of thing. They do have campaigns and they do draw attention to it. Whether they're taking it particularly seriously or not, I don't know. Now, the police in this case have launched an investigation and they're looking for 20 suspects. So, you know, all the clubs can do is ban supporters for life or whatever the measures are, and that's the best they can do.
Yeah. Is there any particular reason why it's sprung up? Or is it allied to
everything that's going on the planet?
The emergence of right-wing movements in other countries around Europe.
I couldn't say, but you mightn't be far off the mark.
Yeah. You see, if they introduce a rule saying if the ref here is racist abuse, your team just lost the match.
Yeah, well,
or they have a goal awarded against them.
So something like that. I mean, what will happen now for the next game for Dynamo Kiev is that they have to play a game behind closed doors, so no fans will be allowed. And so it's you're trying to hit the fans, but it doesn't always work because some of them are idiots, you know.
Right, the UK. We're going to go to now, though. It's about the Chagos Islands, which. UK is supposed to have given them back quite some time ago.
They are, yeah. So the Chagos Islands were part of Mauritius for a very long time, while the UK looked after, ruled over that part of the world. But a couple of years before independence, they decided to sort of siphon off these islands and keep them for themselves. And they gave them a new name. I think they're called the British Territories Overseas or something like that. And then a few years later, they forcibly deported about 1,500 islanders. That was between 1968 and 1973. And that was off the main island called Diego Garcia. And what they did then was they rented it out to the United States, which who now uses it as a military base.
Yes.
Quite important, because they've taken a few, inverted commas, terrorists and non-terrorists there in their time. So the UK were told in May of this year by the United Nations and by the International Court of Justice, I think, that they needed to give these islands back to Mauritius, effectively. And they had until last Friday to do that. And the time has now lapsed. So they're being condemned left, right and centre, as you can imagine, for these actions. But they're saying, look, the UK, these were never part of Mauritius, they're saying, which I suppose is technically true because they had detached them from Mauritius 3 years before Mauritius got independence.
Yeah.
You know, and they're saying, look, they're British and they have no intention as it stands of giving them up. So
will this be settled in courts in some way or another?
I don't know, to be honest with you, because the problem with the UN and certainly with the ICJ is that I think with the ICJ that they're non-binding, aren't they? Both of those resolutions.
That's true. Yeah.
So even if 116 countries to 6 vote in favour of the UK giving back those islands, as long as the USA are paying them big bucks for it, and it only comes up in the Guardian every couple of months.
Yeah.
Are they going to move on it? I don't think so.
Right, Germany we're going to go to now, where they've banned upskirting, or they're going to ban upskirting and rubbernecking Is Germany a bit behind the times here? I would have thought this would have been made illegal in a lot of countries ages ago.
It was a misdemeanor under German law up until now, but now it's been criminalised.
Right.
So it's stronger, if you know what I mean. I'm sure it has been banned, but this bill, which has been approved now, was approved on Wednesday, would send you to prison for up to 2 years. That's even if you publish it, or obviously if you take the photo itself, or whatever it might be. But there are other countries that have done this before. Scotland has it, India has it, New Zealand, Finland. I don't know where we stand on it here, to be honest with you.
That's a good question.
Legally.
Yeah.
But that's what the Germans have decided to do now.
Right, okay. Finally, we're going to go to Ethiopia and votes for this new region.
Yeah, again, this is a story we've been covering.
Talking about before. Yeah.
Yeah, we've covered it over the last few years. So I guess this will probably bring it to a conclusion. And the residents of this, what's now a zone called Sidama, population of about 4 million people, all right? It was, up until very recently, part of one of 10 regions or 9 regions in Ethiopia called the Southern Nations, Nationalities and Peoples Region, right? So it wasn't happy about that, or at least this ethnic group was not happy about that. So they'd been agitating for a long time for a separate region of its own, which would give it a level of autonomy. And it finally had its plebiscite there on Saturday, I think it was. And the turnout was 99.8%.
Oh, crikey.
And they voted.
And not in a dodgy way.
And they voted in favour of the resolution by 98.5%.
Right.
basically set up their own region. So, it's another one of these, I suppose, positive stories that's coming out of this prime ministership of Abiy Ahmed, who, of course, earlier won the Nobel Prize. And he's been doing amazing work, it has to be said, ever since he's come into office. Now, inevitably,
I've made a career just by saying that.
But he's done very well so far.
What should we look out for from less successful politicians of the next week or so, Jonathan?
There's elections in Namibia on Wednesday. Trump will be in the UK on Monday. Yes, and on Tuesday.
How diplomatic of him to visit just in the middle of a general election.
Absolutely,
yes.
And Tuesday, Turkey's President Erdogan is going to meet EU leaders to talk about Syria.
Right.
And, so lots of stuff going on.
Good stuff. Incidentally, we will be talking later on the show about going on your holidays to Syria. Some people are starting to do that already. Jonathan de Burka-Butler, thanks a million for coming in to us. We'll take a break. Back in a minute.